are the members of Beat for Life. We sing on the level of the mountain. We dance when we are struggling on the hill of Asholikota. So we are the members of Beat for Life. We sing on the level of the mountain. We dance when we are struggling on the hill of Asholikota. So we are the members of Beat for Life. We sing on the level of the mountain. We dance when we are struggling on the hill of Asholikota. Go and tell the Americans about Beat for Life. Go and tell the Americans about Beat for Life. Oh, we are the members of Beat for Life. We sing on the level of the mountain. We dance when we are struggling on the hill of Asholikota. So we are the members of Beat for Life. We sing on the level of the mountain. We dance when we are struggling on the hill of Asholikota. So we are the members of Beat for Life. We sing on the level of the mountain. We dance when you are struggling on the hill of Asholikota. Go and tell the Asians about Beat for Life. Go and tell the Asians about Beat for Life. Oh,
Len melo wani
yo wan wa chelo do kwene na pachi wa wa be wa ko chelo do kwene na nyo do wa me ho gi wa ko wan do ki do ti na wa me ho gi wa ko
Good evening. This is Janie Reisner, and welcome to Women's Voices. That exciting music was the first and second cuts from the heart of Bead for Life, songs of African women leaving poverty behind. My guest this evening is Torkin Wakefield, co-founder of Bead for Life, a charitable international organization that has created a market in North America for the handmade paper bead jewelry crafted by women who are pulling themselves and their families out of extreme poverty in Uganda, having fled from the wars in northern Uganda. The beads are made from the colorful pages of used magazines and sold through a web store, www.beadforlife.org. And it's a wonderful website, and through bead parties. Over 1,400 such parties have been held. North Americans partner with Ugandans by opening their hearts, homes, and communities to buy and sell the beads. All profits from Bead for Life are invested in community development projects that, along with income generation, help people escape extreme poverty. This circle of caring and participation enriches us all. These women are also the victims of poor health. Poverty forces people to live with poor sanitary conditions, unsafe drinking water, and high population density. Of Bead for Life members, over 40% have experienced malaria at least once in the past year. Several have lost children to this disease. These are the same women that recorded that vibrant music we were just listening to. They write, "May this music bridge the ocean, and connect the hearts of people working together to create a better world. The women of Bead for Life hope you enjoy listening to these songs as much as they enjoy singing them. My conversation with Torkin Wakefield in Uganda, one of three founders of Bead for Life, was recorded over 2 days. The telephone connection failed in the middle of the interview one day, and we had to finish it the next day. Welcome, Torkin.
Well, hi.
You sound almost as if you're next door.
You know, it's really a miracle what telecommunications has done to being far away.
Really?
I'm like 9,000 miles from you.
What I'm aware of is that it takes a little time.
There's a gap.
Yes. So I'm kind of learning how to do that.
Me too.
Before we start talking about Bead for Life, I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and your own growing up years and perhaps the influence of your own mother that's led you to being the co-director of this international charitable organization.
Well, it's interesting that you ask about my mother, because one of my very first memories of being with my mom was standing next to her while she was at a Braille typewriter. She was translating books for blind people. That would have been back in like the 1950s. And so part of the reason I'm in Uganda now has to do with growing up with a mother who had a really generous spirit toward others. And a woman who just believed that love was the most important thing. Mm. So I've always been interested in service, and my father was a naval officer, and so we traveled all throughout my childhood. And so living abroad is something that I always have done and feel quite comfortable with. The other piece of how we decided to come to Africa and how why my life path is this way is that my husband is an AIDS doctor. And so as our last child went off to college, we thought, Africa's burning up with AIDS. And here, Charles has all this skill and knowledge and experience. So we decided that we would dedicate some portion of our current chapter of our lives to working in Uganda.
Mm. Where is your home if you're not in Uganda?
I'm from Boulder, Colorado. I actually live in a small village outside of Boulder called Gold Hill, but I've been in Colorado. I was born in San Francisco, and then I've lived in Boulder for almost 30 years now.
Could you tell us a little bit about how did Bead for Life come into existence?
Well, before we came to Uganda, my husband had been offered a four-month job to teach the African doctors about AIDS care. And I didn't have a job. Well, I was just going to come along with him, which we call that the sleep-along position. It's the person who's not having to work but gets to come and, you know, carry the bags and make life work. So we came, and he immediately started working, and I thought, geez, I got to get busy here. So I started volunteering in an orphanage for babies who had been, for one reason or another, orphaned or discarded. And then that led me to start doing some volunteer AIDS work. And I was going to visit a woman in a very impoverished neighborhood one day who was dying of AIDS. And I came across this woman sitting on a dusty mat in front of her house, and she was rolling beads. And so I said to her, I just kind of was curious. I sat down next to her, and I said, what are you doing? And so she said, well, I love making these beads out of paper, but I don't have any market for them. So instead, I have to make my living working in the rock quarry. I make $1 a day pounding big rocks into small pebbles. And so she showed me this basket she had, which was full of paper beads and necklaces. And so I bought two or three, and I said goodbye, and I went on with my work that day. The next day, I was back at the orphanage, and I had one of the necklaces on, and the director said, oh, I love your necklace. So I handed it over, and I said, well, you've got to have this. And the next day, the same thing happened, and I began to think, what do you mean there are no markets? You know, 2 days, two girlfriends, both love the necklaces. So I thought that there probably was a market, and I went back to the slum where I had been working, and I found this woman who was making beads and asked her if she would call together all the women she knew who knew how to make these beads. And at that point, my both my daughter and my best friend were visiting me, and the three of us went and we bought a whole bunch of beads from the women who came to this first little meeting. Then I was returning to the United States. So I thought, well, I'll, you know, take back 100 necklaces. I'll see if anyone else likes them. And, you know, Jamie, the people immediately began to like the necklaces, and they were fascinated by the story.
Yes.
Who were the women?
Yeah.
What were their lives like?
Mm-hmm.
What were their children like? Did they have enough to eat? What were the illnesses? How were they coping with AIDS? And I realized there was kind of a hunger of concern and curiosity in my friends, and in when I went into bead stores, I'd show them around, or to a few gift stores, and everybody was affirming that they liked them and that they wanted to stop and hear the story.
Uh-huh.
So I began to think about how story is really something we hunger for, because it's the connection of our lives.
Yes.
It's where we kind of meet in commonality.
Mm-hmm.
We hear about a mother. A mother in Uganda is not that different from a mother in America.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, her challenges are totally different. But in her heart, and in her caring for her child, and her hopes for her child, she's just the same. So that stories and telling the stories and showing photos and starting to exchange letters, all of this became really an important part of Bead for Life.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of that summer, to make this long story shorter, at the end of that summer, I had Ginny Jordan, my best friend, and my daughter Devin Hibbard. The three of us sat down and said, we probably have a little project here that could go. Do we want to do this?
Wow.
Not one of us had ever done anything in fair trade or business. We, Jenny's a psychologist, and I've been working in public health, and my daughter's in international relations. So here we had this business on our hands, and we knew we didn't know much about the business aspect of it, but we did know a lot about the heart aspect of it. So we said, okay, you know, for whatever reason, this has come into our lives, and let's just do it. We can make a difference in lots of people's lives.
Yeah.
And so we began. We came back and, you know, we started doing the things we needed to do to be legal in Uganda, and we started developing the program and enrolling women. And one of the things we did right away is we started developing the product, the beads, the bead necklaces and bracelets and earrings. We made the quality better. We made the shape of the beads, you know, really we planned what shapes we liked the best and the styles, so that we started working on a product that we thought people would love.
Wow. What a wonderful...
That's how we got started.
Yes. What a wonderful story. It's all so very touching. I'm going to interrupt to say that you are all listening to Women's Voices. This is Janie Reisner with my guest, Torkin Wakefield, who's speaking from Africa. She is the co-director of the international charitable organization Bead for Life. As I've looked at your website, and I must say, your website is stunning. It's stunning, stunning visually. It's also stunning in the stories that it tells of these women. I see also that you have covered a great many aspects of their lives.
Well, you know, at first we were totally enthralled by the beads and income generation. You know, finally, women who had been living on a dollar a day, which means you can only feed yourself. That's what a dollar a day does. It gives you the low-carbohydrate meal, cornmeal or potatoes or rice. To go from there to someone who might, well, right now, the beaters, after 2 years, they're making 300,000 shillings instead of 3,000 shillings a month.
Wow.
So you can see the huge difference, and that's a couple hundred dollars. But we began to realize that income generation was only a first step, that if you really want to design a project in which you start chipping away at the things which keep people impoverished. It has to do with more than income generation, although that's a very important piece of it. So one thing we did right away is we started encouraging women to have savings. Now, most of these women had never been inside of a bank. The banks were intimidating to them. They didn't have any idea about budgeting or planning or saving, because that had never been a situation they had to cope with in their lives. So Bead for Life opened accounts for every member and helped them learn how to use a bank. And then we started, at the time we buy beads, we buy them directly from each person twice a month. And at that time, the woman can choose to save so whatever she wants. And we directly deposit it into the bank. This allows her to protect it from other people wanting it, which is not a bad thing necessarily. It's that families stick together. So if anybody in the family has an income, anybody else in the family can come and ask for a piece of it because they need it. And they probably really do, because they're all impoverished. But what it means is that nobody can ever get ahead, because nobody can ever save money. Mm-hmm. So we started direct savings. So learning to deal with money and learning to save money, to delay gratification so that you can get enough money together for further goals. So that was one thing we did. Mm-hmm. Another whole area that's incredibly important to poverty eradication is the area of education. So many children in Uganda cannot afford school fees. And so they have to drop out. Some of them drop out after 1 or 2 years of primary school. Others manage to hang on through the sophomore year of high school. And very few, and especially girls, very few manage to get through all of high school. So there's formal education. And then what we are growingly thinking is more important even is education for youth out of school between the ages of 16 and, say, 26. And they need vocational training. They need to learn to be electricians and computer folks and nurses and drivers and mechanics, caterers, bakers, beauty parlor folks. So that we've started a very aggressive now search for motivated kids who had to leave school and who are sitting at home. There are a lot of people who are willing to work, but there's such unemployment in Uganda that even college graduates can't find jobs here. So this vocational training for skills that are really needed became another critical part of poverty eradication. So we have dealing with income generation, savings, education. Another area we started working in was health, because if you're not well, you can't help yourself get out of poverty. About two-thirds of the women in our project are HIV positive. Some of those have TB as well. Malaria is very common here. Accidents. So we started a couple of different initiatives in the health field. One is that we arranged for women to be able to get malaria diagnosis and treatment just with coupons that they could trade for beads. And the other is that we went to a reproductive health organization for contraceptive planning and gynecological health. And so women can also trade beads to us if they want those services. And finally, we tested all of the children in our project who had whose mothers were HIV positive, so that we could identify the children who had been born with HIV so that they could get the care they needed as early as possible.
Wow.
And then the final thing we did in the world of health is that we have given some of the profits from our bead success to an international hospital here who has a charity ward for complicated surgical problems and for hospitalization for HIV. Mm-hmm. And so that our members, if they are sick or they do need surgery, they can go to that hospital, which is a very good hospital, and get the hospitalization care that they need.
Mm-hmm.
So health is another area that was really important. And then the final part, when we started the project, we did a survey with all of the women, and we found that the one thing they wanted the most was a home of their own, a little piece of land and a home of their own. So we have formed a collaboration with Habitat for Humanity to build a little village in 2007. And we're actually going to start, we're going to take all of the beaters and their important other people out to see the land on Friday. We've just bought 18 acres of land. We're going to build 100 homes and roads and, you know, gardens and whatnot. So that's very exciting. The women are thrilled. They can hardly believe that it's really possible that they're going to have a little plot of land for a kitchen garden and their own home, which they will build. So having a house, if you're impoverished, it gives you two things that you really need. It gives you a place to live so that you're not paying a landlord, and you can't be evicted, you can't be thrown out, which happens all the time to impoverished people, that they have to move because their landlord pushes them on. And the other thing is you can grow food so that you can feed yourself. And possibly you could even rent out a room and have a little income. So as you think about how people really transit out of poverty, it has to do with being able to earn a living, being able to be healthy, and to have a home. So, you know, we are trying, we're far from perfect, but we are trying this holistic approach, which starts with income generation, which is about the bead making, and but then helps them during the time they're in our project learn entrepreneurial skills and develop a business plan and actually launch themselves out of Bead for Life at a time when they're really prepared and have started their next business.
Well, it's incredible. It's all just incredible. It's so very touching. It must have been and is difficult to witness the violence that goes on in many of these women's families and to their children. I've read many of the stories, and they're pretty horrific.
Yeah. Well, half of our group are refugees, or really technically correct, is internally displaced people from the war in the north, which is a rebellion of unspeakable horrors visited on civilian people. And many, many of our members themselves had to run into the night and hide in the from the rebels who had then, you know, recently burned down the home or killed a loved one right in front of them. So to witness, to stand and witness, to not let your heart collapse while it's breaking, and to honor the joy and liveliness and dancing and singing that they bring to their lives, even in the midst of this kind of suffering. Sometimes when I am with them and we're dancing and we're having a good time, I think, how is it that these people have triumphed over the misery? And I don't have the answer for that. There is something about the indomitable spirit, yeah, and the understanding of life and death, how it works together, and difficulty and joy. I think that because there's so many difficulties in an ongoing way here, that there's some compelling force that says to you, if you're going to have joy in this life, you have to have it side by side with the sorrow. And get on with it. One time a woman was describing to me facing into something she didn't want to face into, and she said, when your child dies, of course you stop and cry, but then you must continue. So, you know, there are terrible challenges here, and then there is incredible strength and spirit and lack of self-pity and lack of whiny children and a sense of let's make music, let's laugh. So it's very humbling and gifting to me to live in this culture and to know the women that are in the project.
From their photographs, the strength in their faces was really, really amazing. Well, it sounds as if, too, there is certainly domestic violence. I mean, this is a patriarchal culture, isn't it? Do women...
Yes, it is.
Yeah, Do women have any say regarding the number of children they have? Are they allowed to say no without being beaten or killed?
No, no, no. That's... No, in fact, if you don't want to have sex with your husband, he can throw you out and bring the next... And women will say this. If I don't have sex with him, he will throw me out and bring in the next woman, who is probably herself underfed, so she's willing to be with a man because she wants to eat. Poverty is really a impetus towards violence towards women.
Sure.
Because without money, you have to survive. This is about eating, and so there's so many women who don't want to be with men, but make that compromise because they would starve to death. Oh. Let me tell you about a letter I received today. Sometimes the beaters, as they're coming by, they hand me a note because it's about something in their life. And this note was from a woman who's, she said, if so-and-so comes by, so-and-so Samuel comes by, you should know that I have left him because he's been beating me repeatedly. Don't let him disrupt my ability to be in the program. He didn't even bother to pay a dowry, so I'm not really his. So there was all these messages of, trying to get away from this system and feeling owned and dominated and bought. Anyway, the women who are widowed here mostly would not choose to re-
We lost her.
Bunduki, 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 masana.
All right, well, we'll be prepared.
Reason you got my email this morning was that the internet didn't work for 20 or 18 hours.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You have to gear down your thinking about how things work.
Right. Well, that's not a bad that's not a bad thing.
No.
It slows us down a little bit.
A lot.
Yes.
The internet and this instant communications really runs all our lives. And over here, there really is just, it's not possible to run at the same fast pace.
That must be a relief.
There's a place where that's true. And then there's a place where, you know, you think, oh, no, I wanted to get something done tonight.
Of course.
The electricity goes off two or three nights a week.
Oh,
at 7.
Oh, it does.
So it's it's called load sharing. And it could be something in the coming world because it means there's not enough energy. And so different parts of the city have the energy on different nights.
How do you deal with that?
Well, we used to just light candles and snuggle and go to bed early. Now we live in an apartment building that has a transformer, a generator. And as soon as the electricity goes off, the generator kicks in.
I see. We have something to learn, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, we do, lots.
Back to the bead for life, I was wondering how many, mostly, I understand they're mostly women, are in your program.
Yeah, it's predominantly a women's group, and we have 5 men, 5 brave men, and 160 women, huh. And each of them also employs 4 or 5 people, and almost all of them are women. So I would say 1,000 people are involved, and probably we have 15 or 20 guys. So, you know, and then in America, too, it's largely a women's program because women want to have these wonderful parties. The way we sell the beads, which is really the key to our success, and thank you to all the generous people who have come to bead parties, private individuals, the hostesses open their homes, clean their houses. We send them a pack of beads and a recipe for African food and a DVD and a CD of original music and everything you need to throw a party. And so then we invite people and they come and off it goes. So women come to those parties and then they give the next party. And so it really is a women's organization, both here in Uganda and in the United States.
That's wonderful. I just hope that something out of this interview will happen here. That would be just wonderful.
Oh, I hope so. Please, here's a personal invitation to any woman or man. Teenagers love this project to get involved with Bead for Life. You know, we were talking about something earlier, which I've been thinking about, actually, in these 24 hours where we haven't spoken. And it's about the role of men and women.
Yes.
Can I say something more about this?
Oh, please do.
Men in Africa have a hard road. They sit idly by in frustration and I think a deep kind of personal lack of engaging in the world because of unemployment, because of a lack of possibilities on how to make a living. People who are willing to crush rocks or work as a guard, work for, you know, 45 days in a row without a vacation or without a holiday, the men are willing to work, but unemployment is so extreme here. And that puts men into a situation where they start drinking, they're idle, and that comes back as violence in the house. So it's like everybody is caught up in this difficult web of lack of self-esteem and opportunities to support your family and have some of the good things of life that you know other people have. So we were talking about how women don't have much say over their ability to say yes or no to sexual encounters or to spend money or to own things. There's a lot of gender inequality here, and it's certainly a problem. But I was thinking that it's a problem for the men, too.
Yes. Well, the end result of not being able to say yes or no to sex means having all these children, which is such a hard scene for everyone, for the children.
It is. It's hard on the personal level because it keeps families impoverished. School fees for one child are enormous. And if you have 6 children, there's absolutely no way your children can go to school. And people who all over the world who have the access to planning their family and making their family smaller always do. Countries always develop towards smaller families.
Of course. Well,
and as they start developing and women want to have fewer kids, And then, of course, too, women's education. The more women who are educated, the more they want to plan their families.
Yes. Well, one thing I have to interject into all of that is that I don't believe that any mother would choose to have more children than she could care for if she really had the opportunity and had not perhaps been brainwashed into thinking this is what she should do. I think it's just natural.
That's right. It's the natural thing here. It's just the way you look around you and you see a standard of how people have families. And it's 5 and 6 children. And so maybe you don't even marshal the whole argument for why you want to limit your family. You just know you do. But you're supposed to have more.
Uh-huh.
I have a friend who's a doctor here, a woman doctor. She has 4 children. And I said to her the other day, she can have more children. She said, well, maybe one more.
Huh.
And I was startled because I didn't think someone who had a career and 4 children would want to keep having children. So that taught me something. Not quite sure the entire meaning of it, but
right.
But definitely one of the things that we do at Bead for Life is we have an agreement with an international organization that provides women's health care. And among those health services is family planning. And so if women want family planning, they can trade us beads, necklaces, and bracelets in exchange for a coupon that allows them to get family planning.
Do many women take...
So that's a pretty nifty program.
That's a wonderful program. Are there many women who are open to doing that?
Yes. When we started it, there was a whole group that ran as fast as they could to the clinic.
That's wonderful.
And most of them chose the 3-year NOR plant that you do once in 3 years. And then another group said their husbands wouldn't let them. And then the third group is widowed or not, you know, being with men. And the fourth group is people who want children. So, you know, everybody had their own reasons for choosing or not choosing.
Right.
But the group that annoys me the most is the one where the husband said they wouldn't allow it.
Of course. Absolutely. That's patriarchy in its finest hour, right? Controlling the woman's body.
Or the darkest hour.
Yes. Let us give the website for the Bead for Life. www.beadforlife.org,
because we're a nonprofit organization.
That's right.
Both in the United States and in Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
So .org is probably correct. Yeah, absolutely. Go to the website. Enjoy. You can read about the beaders, individuals. We've posted some of their biographies, and you can read about the current events, all the nifty things we're doing, and you can go to the web store and buy beads. You can read magazine articles about us. You can read about our Habitat Village, which is really exciting coming up.
Beautiful photographs.
So, yes. Oh, well, I have a special pride in that. Those are all taken by my husband.
They are.
Who is an AIDS doctor, but he also is a wonderful photographer.
He,
we've had a lot of wonderful talent come forward. You were mentioning how much you love the website.
Yes.
Well, our webmaster, Michael Waters, lives in Victoria, Canada. And when I was first starting out and I couldn't, you know, I was just trying to get all the resources I had to help me. And so at this group of friends where I had been talking about the project, I said, I need someone to create a website for me. And after the presentation, Michael came up to me. Michael and I have been friends 20 years now. And he said, I'll do that for you. And I said, Michael, this is a big job to create a whole web site that is a store. Anyway, bless his heart, he jumped right in, and he created this site of total beauty and lots of fun.
Yes, I think he's quite...
Thank you for mentioning that.
I think he's quite a remarkable person. He is a musician and brought an engineer, and so now the women have a beautiful CD.
Yes. One of the things that I love about Africa is that creative expression is really the domain of everybody. And so when people sing, they sing robustly, and nobody knows that they're supposed to let their voice be quiet, the way we do in North America, where we hold our voices back. And they also write songs. So as soon as Bead for Life got going, they would show up at the groups, and they'd be singing these songs about Bead for Life, and sometimes they did dances. So I was, again, telling Michael about these wonderful songs, and he came to a staff meeting because he's the webmaster, and he said, next year, my goal is to make a CD for Beat for Life of all these great songs. So he got a friend of his, and the two of them came over here, and they recorded the music. We actually rented the National Theater for one day, which was very exciting because the women had never been in the National Theater. And it was a real thrill to go and stand on the stage and sing.
I bet.
And we recorded 18 songs in four different languages.
And I have that CD, and when this program is aired, we'll be playing some of their music.
Oh, great. Anyway, it's really catchy, you know. I thought, well, I've got to like this music, but I found I was just singing the songs all day long, and the tunes don't leave my head. And anyway, it's called From the Heart of Bead for Life. And anybody, please pick one up at our website. $15 brings the voices of these fabulous women into your living room. And so I hope you can enjoy From the Heart of Bead for Life.
Yes, it's very touching. It's all very all of this is so touching. The expression,
bless your heart.
Yeah, all the expression of the women, and you know the hardship that they have been through, and this zest for life that you mention. It's of we all have. It's, I don't know, it's just the human spirit that continues on in spite of everything.
It's incredible. And one of the things that I think about a lot here is how difficulty hones at the human spirit. Because when I think of their lives, I feel like I would collapse. I would not get out of bed anymore. Yesterday, when we were buying beads, a woman came through, and my husband had taken a beautiful photo of her and her child. And so I said, Beatrice, oh, I have the most fabulous photo of you and your baby. And she looked up at me, and tears sprung in her eyes, and she said, the baby died. Now, no, none of my friends have ever told me that their baby died in such a... I don't know, that somehow it's still part of life here. And it was shocking to me.
Yeah.
So babies die. We had a 10-year-old from the bead group die of cholera over Christmas. So how does the mother's heart live with this kind of wrenching and expectation that life will have very difficult suffering in it?
Yeah.
And the truth of that for impoverished people all over the world.
Yes.
And then on top of that, the human spirit is alive with music and hope and getting on, and mutuality, helping one another, and then song and dancing and drumming and colors, and it's a lot to hold.
It is, isn't it? It really is. What's remarkable, too, about your whole project is that you seem to have a great deal of support from lots of different places. You're able to buy this land. I mean, it seems to be working financially.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's the lowly bead that everybody wants to own. We have a little bracelet. We call it a bangle. It's a single strand. It's on elastic, so it slips easily over the hand. We ask $5 for them. So, you know, everybody can have one. And, you know, we're selling thousands of them. And so, you know, that mounts up. Every little bangle I sell mounts up to, you know, school fees and medicines and hospitalizations and entrepreneurial training and small business loans. And so, yeah, I feel like Bead for Life has been blessed with bringing together a combination of a product which is beautiful and easy to ship, which is important. Mm-hmm. And the great generous spirit of people in North America who want to get involved if only they knew how, and here's a way.
Mm-hmm.
And so you bring together beautiful beads and generosity, and voila, you're able to do some things.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. How about other countries? Are you thinking of other markets?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you ask that, because we've certainly been invited by, I think it's 11 or 12 countries now, to come and teach their women how to roll beads, and could they be part of the project. And so it means that we need to be thoughtful about considering what and how to continue this work the best. And I'm not certain that it has to do with more beads or if it has to do with more activism of getting North Americans and people of good-heartedness all over the world who have resources to each get involved with something, whether it's in Uganda or Botswana or Peru or the Philippines or Laos or India, wherever it is. You know, if everybody does something, millions of points of light would start gleaming all over the world, and you know, it really would make a difference. So I think that Bead for Life's mission is more about that rather than about having more bead projects.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
But I will share with you one little dream I have about Bead for Life, is that if we went to one country on each continent and developed a different kind of bead for each continent, that might be a very lovely symbol of the international nature of this problem of extreme poverty. 40% of the world lives on $2 a day or less. 40% of the world.
Wow.
And so you can go to any continent and find extremely impoverished people who are just struggling to eat each day without finding enough food.
Yes.
So I think if we all get involved, and if Bead for Life can encourage people and help them find that door, that connection, that first child to sponsor in school, or that possible trip you can take that goes to help build a little kitchen in Panama or whatever it is, the right thing will appeal to each and every one of us if we allow ourselves to stay open to where our possible ability to bring resources and help and to be received, too.
Yes.
Because that's a huge part of it. I get so gifted by doing this work. When you get involved with some project overseas, it gives you a lot of love for yourself.
Yes, I'm sure it must. It must. You know what your purpose is. There isn't a question about what you're doing. Well, you have created such a program that works, and you have so many different facets that reach into people's lives and that is successful. So that is something that I think that other countries, other places could draw from.
Yeah, I think that you're talking about an understanding of how to do some things. And I definitely, we feel wonderful about spreading that. I do want to say that there are two other founders of Bead for Life, Ginny Jordan, who lives in Boulder, Colorado, and Devin Hibbard, who lives on Bainbridge Island off Seattle. Devin is our North American coordinator, and Ginny is our president of our board. And so, anyway, that's been another nice thing about Bead for Life. It's been a collaborative effort amongst three women, then another big circle of staff and volunteers and hostesses and beaters and... So, you know, it's really a very dynamic organization where each person is really bringing talent and wisdom. So I just get to be the mouthpiece tonight. I certainly don't want to take all the credit.
Is Devin your daughter? Did I understand that?
Devin is my daughter.
And
Devin is my daughter.
Yes.
And she's doing a fabulous job as the North American coordinator. And I just love working with her.
Well, of course. I wrote this to you in an email, actually, that she certainly is following in the steps of her mother and her grandmother.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, you know, don't you think we learn something about how to be from our moms and try and teach it to our kids? There is a line where, you know, incredibly important.
Yes, it is. I think it just comes through being, you know. At least I never consciously think about teaching it. It just... who I am and who we are.
And what opportunities came and unfolded and that you created, or that just you were just lucky.
Yeah, I know. It's hard to understand how it all works.
It is. Well, fortunately, we don't have to understand. We just keep on bumbling along.
All right. Some of the organizations that have been are supportive, I see here, Sounds True.
Mm-hmm.
Which
Sounds True is, you know, Sounds True?
Well, it's very familiar to me, yes. So tell us about it.
Yeah. Well, Sounds True is a recording and publishing CD company, and what they have done is they've recorded all of the wonderful thinkers and teachers in North America and beyond,
right.
So that you can get tapes and books from them, and,
exactly.
and they'll bring you Thich Nhat Hanh and Ram Dass and Joan Borisenko and Andrew Weil and, you know, people that
right.
are teaching interesting approaches to how to live.
So how do they, what are they doing with your project?
Well, Sounds True is advertising our CD, From the Heart of Bead for Life.
Uh-huh.
And they've been
Great.
Very supportive. They helped us get it printed up, and they've just been friends to us at every turn. So, yeah, we have been lucky. And the other lucky, we had a really lucky thing happen to us at the very beginning. We started in September 2004. And right about that same time, a friend of mine was writing an article, and she heard about Bead for Life, and she asked me if she could submit a little piece to O Magazine. O Magazine printed a little tiny piece for us on Christmas, on the Christmas edition, and that made all the difference in us getting started, because that gave us enough sales to hire our first person and to, you know, set up the bank account and just do those first things that have to happen. So O Magazine is another one that we'd love to collaborating with.
Mm-hmm.
See, and Habitat for Humanity.
They're involved in your building shelters, homes?
Yeah. We're building a village near Kampala,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to Habitat for Humanity is going to oversee the building of 100 homes, and Bead for Life is going to buy the land and put in the wells and the roads and the drainage and, you know, some of the things that help people get going, the marketplace, help develop some small businesses, things like that. So it's a grand hope that that will materialize in 2007.
That's just wonderful. That's so exciting.
You ought to come and visit.
I'd love to.
Okay.
You're kind of far away.
Oh, well, I'm sure you would, and you'd have a fabulous time.
I'm sure I would, too, if I could afford the trip. It sounds, and you do invite people. That's also on your website.
Well, one of the things that if people are interested in visiting Uganda and working on the Habitat for Humanity Bead for Life Village Project, in the newsletters, we are going to start announcing trips of volunteers who can come over, maybe work for 8 or 9 days, and then go on a little safari. And so that might appeal to some people who want to have a vacation that's different and that serves. So anyway, the information about those trips will start appearing in the newsletter probably in, I don't know, May or June, something like that, once we get ourselves sorted out here and underway. You know, anybody listening wants to do that, they should sign up for the newsletter.
On the
which you can do by going to the website and looking in the lower left-hand corner.
Okay, good. So that's a physical newsletter.
No, it's an email, an e-news.
There we go. That's great. Well, I think time is just coming to an end here. It's been truly wonderful speaking with you, Torkin. Just wonderful.
Thank you.
I hope,
Jamie, I hope that you and I can meet.
I hope so, too. Do you ever? You do come back sometimes. To the States?
Yeah, we're actually coming back to Boulder in April and May for 3 weeks.
Uh-huh.
See our children. And
perhaps
yeah.
that meeting might take place in Africa. Wouldn't that be exciting?
That would be. That would be. That would change your life, maybe.
I'm sure it would. Many blessings mm-hmm. on everything that you all are doing. The bountifulness.
Thank you. And thank you for all the attention and caring that you're showing towards Bead for Life. It makes all the difference.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for talking to me. It made me feel closer to home.
Good. Many blessings. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bunduki, 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 my sana. Bunduki, 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 my sana.